The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 14th of September, 2018. On the podcast today, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about commodities, hot commodities, with the EV revolution about to happen. Also, ARC Minerals, ARCM, Blue Jay Mining, JAY, and Ormond Mining, ORM. Also on the podcast, I have Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about Medica, that's MGP, Traxys, TRCS, and Midwich, MIDW. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com, covers the following big cap stocks who had news out this week: Morrisons, that's MRW, GVC Holdings, which is GVC, and Biffa, ticker there, Biff. Plus, I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too, which you can see on the front page of Vox Markets, which is at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good, thank you.
Now, every morning I do a sort of 1 minute sort of macro summary on a podcast, and today I noticed that one of the headlines I included was Asian stocks at a 14-month low. And I thought, really? That is bad. And it's all about this sort of Trump trade tariff war with China, of course, and they're ramping it up, and China's going to the WTO and all this stuff and complaining. And we know this is the way sort of Trump deals, you know, does his deals. He really, you know, it's the way he negotiates, isn't it? He really, you know, throws it all out there, throws everything out there, first of all, and really pushes a hard bargain, then comes back in on negotiations. But, and that's the way you should, if you're bartering, that's the way you should go. You should go extreme at the start and then meet in the middle, you know? But what's your take, John? What's happening? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think this is the way that Trump has been brought up to negotiate hard in New York on property deals. And yes, he does. He goes in quite hard, and then he goes in a bit harder. And then at the end of the day, they come to some sort of arrangement, which is usually a lot softer than where things first started. So with Trump's negotiations with China, we're just waiting for Trump to throw his toys out of the pram again and say, that's it, tariffs on everything from China. And then for him to use that to extract concessions from the Chinese, and we think this is all about the Chinese theft of technology and secrets out of the United States and elsewhere in the West. Because let's face it, the world is being driven by new technology ideas at the moment. The world's biggest companies, Amazon and Apple and Microsoft, are all new technology businesses, and those combined with one or two older businesses like aerospace, such as Boeing, are really driving the U.S. economy to a large degree. So these are important things for the Americans to get right, and it's not just Trump. I mean, he's the difficult mouthpiece that they have, but this is Republican policy, is to go in and sort out China, because China's been taking the pee for some time.
Yeah, well, have they? He's been saying that, have they then? Is that what's happening?
Well, there are many people in the world that think that China has been behaving badly in global markets, and particularly with industrial espionage. It's difficult to access China legally if they've been stealing secrets or not paying up, and it's actually very difficult to access many Chinese markets because of local restrictions that get in the way. So they've not been playing fair, and Donald Trump is trying to redress that balance.
Okay. And but do you think essentially the way it will play out is he'll do one final, right, I'm going to throw tariffs on everything, and then pull it back, because he's got these elections happening, isn't he? And you know, he's doing it for that. So, but do you think he will? You know, it's the old play. We know the old play now. It's play it hard at the start, and then, you know, on negotiations, you know, get a better deal essentially.
Well, he plays to the people, and it really looks as if Trump will win a second term. Because he's got a lot of popular local support. He's seen as doing more for the American people internationally than many presidents before him. So it resonates well with a lot of Americans. I mean, and then I know there are plenty that don't like the rhetoric and the way he talks, but most of them do appear to like the policies that are being pushed through, because it's all about America first, and that fits well with them. So it has depressed metals over the summer, and I think China weaponized the copper price to some degree by possibly persuading somebody to liquidate a large amount of copper in China. And then I think the markets did the rest of it for them, just with a lot of momentum selling. And unfortunately, this spread to other metals in the complex, presumably with traders deleveraging and reducing their risk in these areas. And we've seen today that nickel prices carried on falling, despite the fact that there's a very large deficit in the nickel market developing this year. And that is reducing the available stocks really quite quickly.
Yeah. Okay, well, nickel. You mentioned nickel there. I mean, obviously, copper's been coming off as well. But so you think it's good to get exposure to nickel? Because nickel, of course, plays into the old EV market, doesn't it? As does copper. So, yeah, good stocks for nickel. So any news out on specific companies this week, John, you've been looking at anyway?
Well, ARC Minerals produced some pretty good drill results the other day. The first set of actual drill assays from their project in Zambia, the Kalaba copper cobalt project. In fact, it looks like it's more of a cobalt project by value. Quite a lot more cobalt in there than we had anticipated. And if you combine the copper and the cobalt grades, you're up at probably something over 0.9%, which is more than economic these days. Mm-hmm. Clearly, a certain amount of work to be done to determine the scale of the project. We did a quick and dirty and fairly conservative review.
I like the quick and dirty. I like that phrase, quick and dirty review there.
Yes.
I don't know, ask you what you got into there and how you do that, but essentially, go on, carry on, John, go on.
Well, it's a very simple analysis on how much, what tonnage of ore might be in the ground. Mm-hmm. And so we reckoned at least 15 million tons. In fact, I'm quite sure it'll be a lot more than that. And it starts to give us a view on what sort of value the company should have.
For people not aware of that, so you say 15 million tonnes there, and then how do you extrapolate out from that, you know, what kind of production rate and what kind of valuation? How do you get the valuation from that?
Well, we can work out a theoretical production rate. We would compare it with peer groups in the marketplace, and we can see that at its current market cap, it fits relatively well. But I mean, we are expecting this tonnage estimate to rise very substantially from here, which is why we'd continue to be buyers of this stock. So it's having lots of cobalt in the mineralogy is a very good problem to have, because cobalt up at $62,000-$63,000 a ton is a great price, and we know that cobalt is likely to remain a very important metal for battery producers going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely cool. So that's ARCM, of course. What are they, 25 million market cap around about that, aren't they?
Yes, around that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's at 4.5 pence there. Okay, cool. Marvellous, John. Any other companies you're looking at?
Well, Blue Jay Mining updated the market today on what's been going on in Greenland. They've done a lot of work through the field season. They can't work there all year round. Well, they could do, but it's a cold, icy place in the winter. So they just work through the summer months. They'll be finishing up there quite soon. They've had 60 people up at the camp. They've got a lot accomplished. It's a very simple project. They've drilled a lot more holes, so there'll be a reasonably significant resource increase expected. I'm also expecting an increase in the ilmenite grade, and this already looks like the world's highest grade ilmenite project of any scale in the world. It's a particularly clean type of product as well. So the company is in close discussions with a number of the major peers in the ilmenite processing world, as the companies that produce titanium pigments and titanium sponge for metal production. And so those are the key players to talk to, and they're based in the US and China and wherever. So they're in discussions with all these guys, and hopefully they'll sign up contracts to take about 450,000 tons a year of concentrate material from the project.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart then. It's come off a bit, isn't it? At the highs of like 26 pence, it's now down at just under 16 pence. But it did bounce recently off the 14 pence level. And so I suggest that may retest that, but that may be where it consolidates, you know, all things being equal. But 15, 16, 14 pence there, it looks like this could be, because it's oversold, it looks like it could be, you know, coming towards a bit of support there. So there you go. Marvellous, John. Anything else? Or is that it? Are you going to get down and dirty with something else now?
I think that's probably enough for now. There was a little news out of Ormond Mining that's not said anything much for a while. But they're talking about commissioning the Barracapardo tungsten project in Spain. So it's nice to see news on that at long last. The tungsten price is looking more healthy than it did, and I think this is a project that should hopefully be more in the news going forwards. But they have really been quiet. They're a little bit delayed on the project as it stands, but the capex is coming through, and it's all being paid for by a private equity fund called Oaktree, who are backing the construction of that project.
Marvellous stuff. So that's ORM, ticker there, Ormo Mining. And that's good work. John, thanks for that. Speak next week.
You're welcome. See you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Smold, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You're all right, Russ.
I'm very well, Justin. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, thanks. See, I just posted out a thing from Mark Carney today saying that, I don't know where it came from, but he said, worst case scenario, apparently, house prices could fall by 35% over the next 3 years if there's a chaotic no-deal Brexit. I don't know what chaotic means. People running in the streets, setting things on fire.
Yeah, I think it means no-deal Brexit. The UK government doesn't do anything and everybody just kind of stands there wringing their hands. So I guess it's what he would view as the doomsday worst-case scenario. Though clearly, people like Tim Martin of Weatherspoon, whose results are out today, and he would obviously say the opposite and say, what are you getting stressed about? So,
Yeah. Do you know what? It's nothing like to create a bit of Twitter sort of conversation where I tweet that out and people started saying, oh, ridiculous. And I don't know where they get that from, that 35%. I think, is it something to do with stress tests? If that happened, I think they may fall
that
much.
Yeah, on house prices, then what the knock-on effect is on consumer confidence and on consumer wealth and then banks and so on. So yeah, I think they've kind of laid it on with the trowel just to look at, a potential worst-case scenario.
Yeah. Exactly. So there we are.
I'm sure Brexiteers will be up in arms because obviously the idea is that Mr. Carney is, politically neutral. But I guess he would argue he's just expressing a viewpoint from the point of view of a central banker and an economist. So he's got a crystal ball. Well, he hasn't got a crystal ball. He's peered into what he thinks is his crystal ball. The levers will do the same, and we'll see who's right. We are going to find out in one way, shape, or form at some stage, as we discussed last week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've got to do these extreme tests, haven't they? See what would happen. They've got to do these scenarios, I suppose. But I think people have translated that he's saying it will happen. Saying it will happen.
It's a worst case, and it's a stress test, and economics is not it's not a pure science. It's nicknamed the dismal science because, in some ways, people tell me that modern economics has gone down a very sort of formulaic, scientific, if this happens, that happens route. And we know it just doesn't work like that because you're dealing with people. And in the end, people do strange and weird and interesting things when there's money involved and they operate, they can work in ways, driven by greed and fear, that means they can do things that are irrational, which would have an economist chewing razor blades. It doesn't fit into their models. But that's why economics isn't a pure science, because you're dealing with people and they will do things that are entirely, entirely unexpected. So Mr. Carney's having his best guess. Mm-hmm. But, as we all know with best guesses, it's not going to work out to the letter. You know, I've spent 27 years trying to predict where share prices are going, so I know how hard it is.
Well, that's what I said. Exactly. I said the same thing. I said it's them saying 35% drop is like trying to predict their share price, how far that would go down. So I'm assuming they've done this as an extreme, you know, test as well. But you're right, no one knows. And do you know what I said before about humans and robots? I think in about 10, 20 years' time, we'll look back at this time and think, did they honestly let humans drive cars? Because the humans are very emotional. And if you actually get to know people closely, you think a lot of people are off the scale. You think they're questionable. You know, and so you think you put in a choice of a robot, and you could probably travel 200 miles an hour on the motorway, but each car would be sort of half a mile gap in between each other. There'd be no sort of up the back of someone. It's, you know, humans are emotional creatures, and I think that we do overreact. Yeah. And
I would imagine that most car accidents are the result of pilot error rather than mechanical failure. So
exactly.
I mean, and that is clearly the. I mean, I actually, without wishing to go all la-di-da on you, I was on BBC World Service Television on Business Live at 8:30 in the morning recently, and Ben Thompson and just threw me a question. So there's this story here that Boeing are working on planes that have only got one pilot, not two, and that they're actually already working on pilotless planes. What do you think?
Yeah.
A pilotless plane.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that just a logical extension of what you discussed with regard to cars? Now, equally, you know, I've got a very good friend who's actually a senior pilot at British Airways, no less. Mm-hmm. And he says, and he does long haul loan. He says, most of the time, I'm bored out of my tiny head because Intel inside is flying this enormous bird. But as he said, I and my co-pilot are there for when something goes wrong.
Exactly.
And I guess that's the barrier you'll clearly have to get over with cars. Because people think, well, I'm in charge. And certainly with aeroplanes, I think the thought of getting on an aeroplane with nothing in the cockpit except a bit of software being piped up, you know, through the ether from some air traffic control, I think would probably give most people the collywobbles. But again, you know, if you read one of Malcolm Gladwell's books, you know, the concepts of, you know, checklist that Atul Gawande, the doctor, is so hot on. You know, one of the Korean Air had a horrendous crash. Or Hawaii or somewhere, and the reason there was that the Korean language is so deferential to superiors.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just say to the senior pilot, "For goodness sake, we're gonna crash."
So you've got, and
that was why the plane crashed, because the co-pilots saw something that the senior pilot didn't, but they didn't feel able to point out he was making a mistake. So that's all. So Korean Air, the official language is now English, where, let's face it, you can get pretty salty in Anglo-Saxon with people pretty quickly when you want to. Mm-hmm. And Korean Air has not suffered a similar catastrophe since, thankfully. But again, it shows that plane crashes generally pilot error, but do you really think people will trust getting on a plane without one at the minute? I'm not sure, but I'm sure in the fullness of time, people will think nothing about it.
Exactly. Well, no, I mean, do you know what? I think that most deaths caused in transport on cars, you're right. And again, like you said there, it's human error most of the time. And yet, you know, I suggest that robots are a better alternative. And I've had people argue, it's ridiculous. And I said, well, no, hang on. If you look at the evidence here, because they use the evidence of one or two crashes being trialed by these robots. But I mean, if you compare
that
to...
Yeah, they have.
But they have to be a lot safer than humans for this to happen, for the rollout of robotics and automated driving to happen. It has to be so much more safer than human error. Otherwise, it wouldn't go ahead. So, it's going to happen. It's a matter of time, I think. It will happen. And I can't believe people are saying, that'll never happen. Of course it will. Anyway, let's look at things we can't predict.
We'll certainly have a bit more control over, assessing valuations in our own sweet way anyway. So, yeah.
Exactly.
And company
right.
models and competitive position and management acumen, yes.
Yeah. So, what are we starting off with?
Three against the field. Medica, Traxys and Midwich. We've looked at them all before with varying degrees of success. So we'll start off with Medica, MGP on AIM, about 175 million cap stock, headquartered in Hastings, and if you my adopted county of Sussex. And if you remember, this is the company that provides radiologists and x-ray services to the NHS.
Because as we
know, the poor old NHS still creaking at the seams, constantly saying we're under-resourced, we need more skills, we need more cash. And Medica is one of the companies that's looking to try and help by providing radiologists in a partnership with the NHS to cut waiting times, improve patient outcomes. Mm-hmm. And remember, this is the company that is paid per body part scanned by the radiologists and the X-ray specialists, which all sounds a bit ghoulish, with products called Nighthawk and Cross Section. We first looked at this in May 17. Share price was 222. It's now sort of 150 odd. And it has been a lot lower. So it's fair to say it's not been the greatest success of all the things that we've looked at in our 2 and a bit years together. But the interim results have just come out, and they were actually no nasties, no surprises, just solid, which after a tricky year or so is good. Revenues up 18, operating profit up 15, no sign of margin pressure, earnings per share up 16, and net debt rattling down, now just £2.5 million. Okay. The company has added 33 radiologists in the half, so it's up to 339. That's obviously a strong lead indicator for future business. It's added another 7 already in the second half. And this is really where the problem was. It wasn't adding radiologists as quickly as everybody initially thought. And the NHS, given its financial position, is obviously having to be careful how it spends its pennies. And so therefore, and it's a lesson I should have learned with all sorts of stocks, because government, anything that's relying on government tends to happen more slowly than expected, tends to happen at a lower price than expected, because in the end, the government hasn't got an awful lot of money to play with. So I think we've hit on a story that's a good story, benefit of hindsight, paid the wrong price to access it. You're looking at comfortable double-digit trend earnings per share growth based on analyst forecasts. The dividends crept up a little bit. You're now paying a multiple in the high teens. When we climbed aboard, you were paying something up, much nearer the high 20s, which, again, benefit of hindsight, wasn't the right thing to do. But there's no debt, very little debt, I should say, so the clock's not ticking on them. Lead indicator of radiology traditions is there. I think now it's just one way to just hunker down and let it keep on doing its stuff, I think.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It had a nice chart sort of formation. It bounced off £1.20 about three times.
Yeah.
And the third time, it had a really big up day. It went from like £1.20 to £1.40, and then that's a new level now. And now it's just pierced the 200-day moving average, which is a good sign. It's come back a little bit, but that seems quite what on a simplified level, people say if it's above that moving average, it's normally very bullish. So it's good there. It's looking good the chart. Yeah, starting to move.
So just be patient. We can afford to be patient, having got it wrong, because there's no debt and there's very little debt in the business. So it's not as if there's a big sword hanging over it.
Yeah. Okay. Is it Traxys next?
Traxys is the next one. Leeds-based company TRCS on AIM, £200 million cap. We've had a lot more joy with this one. Looked at it April 17 at 4.30p. It's now just north of £7. And so that's a 64%, 65% run. Remember, this is the company that's transport technology and traffic flow analytics. So it provides signaling equipment and technology to network rail, to the train operators, so they can optimize network capacity. And then traffic flow, they will provide Silverstone or the Isle of Wight with how to get people in and out of major events without snarling up the whole county. So it's a really good business. Trading update in early August was good. Full year revenues, adjusted profits and net cash all better than expected. Organic growth and acquisitions bedding in. Rail and traffic both doing well. I think, and the full year's in November, my one issue now, just going back to where we were with Medica, is you're now paying 29 times forward earnings for this year, 27 for next year. It's gone up 40% in 6 months.
Yeah.
We're up 60-odd. If I was a bit windy, I think I'd be thinking, okay, let's lock some in here. Or maybe if you still, the company's a really good company. Maybe what you do is take profit and just sell back to your initial position for a bit of a free ride, as it were. But I think given those multiples, it's a tempter to knock some out and take some profit now.
Yeah, it's always been a bit valued quite highly, hasn't it?
I'm being careful. Medica, I got burned on going into too high. Craneware, which we had a lot of fun with, the company that provides software to private hospitals to help them with their budgets and planning and everything, thought I'd been a real smart aleck with a 70-odd percent profit in that. I think it's gone up about another 50 or 60-70% since. So, valuation, as we know, in itself will not stop a stock going up or going down. Expensive stocks get more expensive. Cheaper ones get cheaper. What you need is a catalyst to change market perception in the meantime. I certainly don't think anything's going to go wrong at Traxys, but I just think in the end, valuation will start to slow something down. But with Craneware, I thought that, and I was wrong. But I think Traxys having had a great run, I'm prepared to sit and wait for a bit of a pullback now, particularly when it's just really gone vertical in the last 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely marvellous. Yeah, no, I mean, when you see a chart like that, looking at a 12-month chart, and it's that strong, you think, wow, it's going to have a pullback sooner or later. But, normally...
Maybe
when
I'm trying to be too much of a smart-ass.
Yeah, normally when you're watching it doesn't have a pullback, then you say, it's never going to pull back. And once you pull the trigger and buy something, it pulls back. So it's patience.
I mean, to be fair, good companies, time is on your side. Companies with weak balance sheets or with poor business models, time is always working against you. So, that's always the thing to bear in mind there, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anything else, Rush?
Midwich, MIDW on AIM, just over 500 million market cap, Suffolk headquartered. In the last year since we looked at it, it's gone up 45%, had a tremendous run. This is an audiovisual and document solutions distributor, organic growth and acquisitive growth. It's got works with over 300 brands, all of the ones you can think of for this type of kit. Philips, Samsung, Kodak, NEC, Canon, over 13,000 customers across the UK and Europe. Interim results this week, really, really good. Revenue was up 25%, gross up 32%, operating profit up 26%, earnings per share up 60%, dividend up 10%, terrific. But again, you're at this issue now. I mean, net debt's gone up because of some acquisitions it's made and some investment in working capital. Nothing serious there. But again, it's now on a mid-20s multiple, 26 times forward, for a business with a 2% yield that makes a 4% operating margin. And in the end, it's a distributor. It's. I know they will say that it helps clients get the most out of the equipment and we provide solutions, but it's not the highest margin business in the world to be paying a very, very lofty multiple for. So again, having had a lot of fun with it, I'd just be inclined to take some profit, move on, and see what happens. But in the knowledge that it's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, yeah. MIDW, again, it's a very similar chart. Tracks it, really, yeah.
Yeah, there you go,
it's
you see.
It's up the top right of the screen, yeah. Cool, marvellous stuff for Russ. Any plans for the weekend?
My parents are actually coming down from Yorkshire for the weekend. Mm. Though the bad news is, not bad news, I'm looking forward to it enormously. I'm doing a roadshow next week for my company, so I'm actually having to fly to Edinburgh on Sunday afternoon, torn away from the loved ones, but I'm catching up with a few old buddies in Edinburgh for a few scoops on Sunday evening, and then roadshows for financial advisors only, sorry everybody, in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Manchester, Chester, London next week.
Marvellous stuff.
It's good job. Wow. I like the sound of my own voice.
Yeah, well, the lifestyle of a rock investment rock star, that is, Russ, best
well,
of it. you didn't deny it. Lovely stuff. Have a nice weekend, Russ. Speak next
and
week.
You, Justin, take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yes, good morning. Very, very good, thank you. Very good.
My eyes and ears on the bigger cap space. So who's been releasing news? What's the news on any of the big cap space companies?
Well, we range from sort of Morrisons first, I guess, in food retail. Yeah. Big old name, of course. Many people know that. Shop there on a weekly or semi-regular basis. And, of course, food retail, it's been so much in the news over recent years. Tesco's being under all sorts of pressures. The rise of the Germans, Aldi and Lidl, etc. It's been a real industry of change. And obviously the big announcement of this year has been the anticipated merger of Asda and Sainsbury's. And what that's done is that's really buoyed some of the sector shares. And Morrisons, which is sort of a bit of a second tier play if you look at market share versus, the newfangled Asda, Sainsbury's, when that gets the regulatory go-ahead, and obviously Tesco's, it's a real tier two player. Their shares, I just had a look at the share price chart. The shares today are trading at a level we last saw in late 2013. So, that goes to show sort of both the depth of the challenges to the sector, because Morrisons like Tesco's and all of them got sold off in times of strife and problems, but also the renaissance, the bounce back in more recent times. Today's numbers look superficially very, very good. I mean, you've had a 10th successive quarter of like-for-like growth, so that's a tick in the box. They've pushed debt down further, they've paid a special dividend, and they're talking positively about link-ups with companies such as Amazon, Ocado, and in sort of the wholesale area too. So, you look at everything, you think to yourself, Morrisons actually is back on track. And, this is kind of interesting because we see retail is is competitive. But food retail, of course, is it's a bit more of a necessity. You know, you need food to eat. And even though, as I say, there's been some market changes, the rise of the Germans and related, the Asda Sainsbury's deal, I think, has really helped these companies work out that actually there is sort of an area, an angle that they can sustainably sort of use in order to keep on attracting consumers. Bigger range than the Germans, more online capability, in some senses, more attractive stores, etc., etc., the customer experience, whatever that means. If I look at the Morrisons numbers today, what I think to myself now is that they're back to a real steady state. I say it's chucking out a 3% plus dividend yield at the moment, which is sustainable. Free cash is way, way bigger than that. They're trading on sort of a mid-teens multiple. It's back to what a food retail company should be trading at, which I think is kind of really interesting after these years of strife. So my feeling with Morrisons is, ticking the box for the numbers today, it's gone back to being what it always used to be, which was sort of grinding it out, you know, in line with the broader economy and other trends. Food retail companies, of course, they tend to do okay when there's a bit of inflation. So if we do see a little bit more inflation, and obviously we've seen some food price inflation in recent months, they tend to do a little bit better on that. So I think tactically, I would say Morrison shares are probably still going up. But my gut feel would be on a big valuation basis. If you're chasing this one to make big bucks, look elsewhere. You know, if you like the, in quotes, easy money, the big money's already been made. I think the share goes back to being a sort of a more defensive share within your broader portfolio. So if you hold it, keep on holding it, but you don't need to chase it aggressively here unless you're looking for a bit of solid dividend income or are a big fan of its stores, if that's where you shop each week. So sensible, solid numbers. I don't think, though, it's romping, you know, significantly north of today's share price in the immediate term. You may find better and easier shorter-term opportunities to make money elsewhere.
Marvellous. I don't know if you mentioned it, but wasn't there something in the week? I was looking, trying to look at the chart for it when you started talking about Morrisons then, so I can't concentrate on two things. But did you mention that there's a legal issue going on there at the moment or not? There was, I'm sure it was Morrisons. I'm sure it's something about they've paid men working in distribution jobs more than women. So a legal firm is saying it could be up to cost them up to $1 billion. I don't know
It was Tesco's that I think they bought the law case against. But it's clearly applicable to probably many companies, not just food retail companies around the country. The general thought was that it was sort of, in terms of the reason for the wage discrimination, was a practical one, that some of the jobs would be deemed as requiring special skills, mostly, you know, lifting heavy boxes, etc.
Oh, no, Morrison's is. Yeah, Morrison's facing a $1 billion equal pay claim. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Tesco's, I think, got the biggest number and the sort of all the headlines. But yes, all of the food retail companies, but actually any company with significant distribution operations is potentially at risk here. Yeah. However, I think the feeling is that it's probably more something which it will be settled through prospective kind of job applications or whatever, being a bit more less sort of differentiated in that sense.
And that billion figure is probably the best top case. Every case was settled, you know, in favour of the employee. That's probably the most they'd get, and it's probably just below $1 billion. Otherwise, it's over $1 billion. So that's best case scenario. When it comes down to it, and they negotiate and all that stuff, it probably won't be anywhere near that.
I think if you look at what the recent wage negotiations have been, companies like Tesco's, I think, have taken a bit of a lead here, but I think all the others will follow. Have basically said, look, it's sort of equal pay for equal jobs going forward. What we had previously was a different arrangement where they will claim, I think, these jobs weren't quite the same, but now with further disclosures and further indications, they're getting to that point. So my feeling is, retrospectively, they won't be able to apply it and hence get these big awards, but prospectively in the future, it's not going to be an issue, and they will make sure that they get around these issues through, you know, making sure these jobs are clarified and advertised in the right and proper manner. So I don't think it's an issue, but hey, you never know. This is why you've got to do your research and keep your eyes and ears open for all sorts of stuff around. It certainly hasn't overhung Morrison's shares over recent weeks and months.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. What's next, Chris?
So I guess we should look at GVC. Now, I must admit, I'm not the greatest fan of gambling companies. GVC is obviously a big player Initially online, but obviously they've done this big deal with Ladbrokes Coral. They've merged with them. So essentially, as part of a sort of a general sector consolidation across the whole betting space, where online and sort of physical operators, you know, bookies operators, if you like, they're all kind of trying to do the same thing, trying to attract not dissimilar customers. And they've merged all their operations in a bunch of deals that have been ongoing in the sector. And obviously, this is one where potentially you put Ladbrokes, Coral and GVC together, and you know there's a bunch of interesting brands and market share opportunities there. What's interesting about today's numbers, I think, is that they're talking up the deal. Ladbrokes Coral only closed in the last few months, and they're talking up the synergies and efficiency gains they can get from that deal, which is always good. But bottom line is that they're still talking about a very positive World Cup impact. You know, most bookmakers, you'd expect them to talk about that, but clearly was a big period of time for them. But I think most importantly, what they're also talking about is still the opportunity in the States. And this is an interesting one, because obviously the States for once is behind many other parts of the world in terms of their gambling capabilities, particularly online gambling capabilities. And clearly there's lots of potential scope for growth there if liberalization really does kick in. Now, all of these companies, William Hill, GVC, Paddy Power, Betfair and the rest, they're all striking deals and JVs in the States to gain access to the various parts of the States where things like sports betting liberalization is starting to come to the fore. And so really, when I look at the numbers today, GVC's numbers per se were absolutely fine. I think the Ladbrokes Coral thing is quite interesting. They're still seeing declines, of course, in the physical locations, and most of the growth is coming, all of the growth is coming from the online operation. But really, when I look at the share today, the big hope factor in it is the States. Unsurprising, the States is potentially a very huge market versus the UK, Europe, rest of the world, etc. Mm-hmm. What I find fascinating about all these gambling shares, and the reason why I haven't really been chasing them recently, is that people have discounted that US opportunity really aggressively, as if it's a gimme that they're going to make out in the States hugely. And of course, we all know that these things take time. If everyone's going for it, there's going to be a bun fight, there's going to be a lack of profits in the short term, there's going to be, you're going to need to put infrastructure in and advertising and related. The thing with GVC shares, and it's sort of a law of round numbers observation, is that this 1,000 pence level is a real big one for them. It's been a kind of a previous resistance, and I think, I wonder now whether it's a support price. So I think the shares when I last looked were about 1,060p, 1,070p, sort of not too much changed on the day after the numbers. But for me, I think there's a little bit too much enthusiasm for US sort of betting potential in this sector share price. I'll be waiting for a dip below that 1,000p level, see if you got a bit of support at that point and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Yes, a strong looking chart there, isn't it? Do you see? Wow.
It's the benefit of merging businesses. And, you know, Ladbrokes Coral, who themselves are obviously a merger, you can tell by the names, you know, putting that together with GVC, there's going to be some synergies from it. They're all, particularly in the online world, trying to do not dissimilar things. Mm-hmm. And they've got a bit more scope for kind of coordinating those efforts a bit better. So, you know, you can see the reasons why the shares have done well. The companies come from something to from nothing to something. But as I say, I think there's a little bit too much enthusiasm for the US in the share price today, and that makes me chill a little bit and just sort of await developments.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Anything else, Chris?
Well, final one, quick one is on Biffa. Biffa is obviously a name well known in waste and recycling. You see them sometimes on the bin lorries or the bins around the place. A little trading statement today: shares are kind of in the sort of the mid 200s, 260 pence odd at the moment. Kind of really interesting statement, because they said something that caught my eye. It, on the sort of the core industrial waste business, still going great guns there. And, you know, regulation is a really big thing now. If companies want to get rid of waste, particularly sort of hazardous waste or problematic waste, it is expensive. It's very regulated. Only so many companies can do it. Biffa is one of the leaders there. And I note that in their little statement today, they talked about they're still acquiring companies to help build out their network even more. And what's really striking is, often when you buy a company, you pay a pretty penny for it. Biffa, because of these regulations and because of, if you like, the advantage of being a big player, they're able to buy some of these sort of mom and pop operations, these smaller local operations, actually at relatively interesting levels, and integrate them in a very kind of accretive way into their bigger business. So they're continuing to do that and talking, you know, good guns on that. So that's good. I think what overhung the shares a few months back earlier in the year was that recycling prices took a bit of a tumble. And this is linked to with China, among other things. China's refusing to take more of our waste, and that temporarily dumped recycling prices. They're talking about prices firming up there. And I think the reason prices are firming up is that ultimately, be it driven again by regulation or environmental concerns, all countries are having to find solutions for this, issue of recycling and waste and too much plastic floating around the oceans and everything else. And with those responsibilities comes pricing power and comes profits for the sort of the waste recycling companies. And so they're talking a much better story on recycling this time around versus a few months ago. Prices are firming up a little bit. They're sort of starting to not face as many kind of competitive or price plunging sort of issues. So that's good. The whole local authority bins area is still tough. You know, that's been the case for a while. We know that local government is under a bit of funding pressure, and obviously that means that when the bin contracts come out, they're not paying a pretty penny for those. But bottom line is, I think Biffa, with this core industrial waste and improving recycling area, it's a company where the theme is still good, and they've got a lot of capability in that area. When there's more regulation, good capability, that tends to mean profit. So for me, I think I find them a bit more interesting than many of the utilities, which obviously are also regulated and whatever. But I think these boys have the capability to make a bit more money a bit more easily. When I look at the rating, it's not particularly high. I think this one could have a go at £3. But in order to do that, it's got to push through the sort of the 260, 270p resistance area on the chart. So we'll have to watch out for that. But I like this one, and I was heartened by the trading update today.
Lovely. And you can't fault the ticker Biff, can you?
Biff. So, you know. There you go. Absolutely.
Yeah, marvellous stuff, Chris. Thanks for that. And we'll speak next week, fella.
Sounds good. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Who's counting down? It's Angus Energy, ANGS. At four, Amerisa Resources, AMER. At three, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO. At two, Europa Metals, EUZ. I do think it's going to be an exciting few days or couple of trading sessions for Europa Metals, because scoping studies out before October. It's the first time, of course, that company will put economic values around that project in Spain, safe jurisdiction. And I think compared to the market cap, which is around just sub 7 million, I think they could be quite impressive. We've had news out this week, which was very positive, which means they're going towards building a mine, or they're putting the relevant permits in place. So I think it could be quite exciting. And number one, most followed company, is Orosur Mining. And that's had a massive rise, isn't it, of late, due to a JV coming in, a bigger company coming in and JVing with them. And that's OMI ticker. All right. A top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Independent Oil and Gas, Harvey funding update. Well done, Harvey. At four, New Formix, NXP001, preclinical milestone achieved. At three, SDX Energy, TR1. At two, Management Resource Solutions, Backman plant hire secures, 2 million in works. And number one, most liked RNS came from Sirius Minerals, Royalty Financing Investment Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.